Today's Database and Methods, a cyber seminar series hosted by VIREC, the VA Information Resource Center. Thank you to CIDR for providing technical and promotional support. Database and Methods is one of VIREC's core cyber seminar series. It focuses on helping VA researchers access and use VA databases. This slide shows the series schedule for the year. Sessions are typically held on the first Monday of every month at 1 p.m. Eastern. More information about this series and other VIREC cyber seminars is available on VIREC's website, and as Whitney mentioned, you can view past sessions on HSR's VIREC cyber seminar archives. A quick reminder to those of you just signing on, slides are available for you to download. This is a screenshot of a sample email you should have received earlier today before the session, and in it you will find a link to download today's slides. Today's session is titled VHA Corporate Data Warehouse, CDW, Using CDW Data to Conduct a Research Study for SQL Beginners. And this will be presented by Dr. Ann Hines. Before I introduce our speaker today, we'd like to ask our audience a few poll questions to get to know you better. So Whitney is going to go ahead and launch these two poll questions simultaneously. You will see the poll pane pop up on your screen. If you do not see it, please go to the lower right-hand corner of your screen, click on the ellipses, click the poll, and that will open the polling pane. The first question, what is your primary role in projects using VA data? Answer options, investigator, PI, COI, statistician, methodologist, biostatistician, data manager, analyst, or programmer, project coordinator, or other. And if you select other, please open up the chat function and type in your job title there. Then you're going to need to scroll down using the scroll bar to access the second poll. How many years of experience working with VA data do you have? Answer options, none. I'm brand new to this. 1 year or less. More than 1 year, less than three. At least 3 years, less than seven. At least 7 years, less than 10. Or 10 years or more. And as soon as those answer options, after you select your two answers, please be sure to, all the way at the bottom, press submit so that those are recorded. And with that, I will turn it over to Whitney to read the results.
Thank you so much, Molly. The poll is open and running. We just have a couple more people who are making their choices, so I'll just let that run through really fast. Just wait until they... All right, it seems like things have slowed down, so I'll go ahead and close out this poll. And the results. For what is your primary role in projects? We have 12% said A, investigator, PI, COI, 8% said B, statistician, methodologist, biostatistician, 29% say C, data manager, analyst, or programmer, 9% said D, project coordinator, 14% say E, other, and some of those others I see are assistant privacy officer, nurse informaticist, chief NFS, and that's all for that. How many years of experience? We have 10% said A, none, I'm brand new to this. 14% said B, 1 year or less. 9% said C, more than one, less than 3 years. And 9% said D, at least three, less than seven. And then last, I'm sorry, not last. 3% said E, at least seven, less than 10 years. And then lastly, 10% said F, 10 years or more. Thank you, everyone. Back to you, Molly.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that. It's helpful to know. We also have one more question specific to this session that we're going to go ahead and get to. Have you ever pulled data yourself from the corporate data warehouse? Yes or no? Go ahead and answer that in the poll pane. And again, be sure to scroll down and submit your answer so that it is recorded.
All right. Thank you, Molly. So our answers are streaming in quite rapidly. I think we've slowed down for now, so I'll go ahead and close out this poll as well. And share the results. We have 26% said A, yes, and then 34% said B, no. Thank you, everyone. Back to you, Molly.
Thank you. So at this time, I would like to introduce our speaker. We have Dr. Ann Hines joining us. She is a senior technical analyst with BI-REC and has over 17 years' experience working with VA data. She previously worked for the Denver-Seattle COIN as a data analyst, was a clinical research coordinator for oncology patients at the Denver VA, and was a database programmer and analyst for rheumatology HSR&D researcher. Her PhD is in biomedical engineering with an emphasis on neuroprosthetics for stroke and spinal cord injury patients. And with that, I would like to turn it over to Dr. Hines. And you should now have the privilege to advance.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to today's presentation. So today's talk, our objective is to describe how to pull CDW data for a small study. This talk is applicable to both research and operations projects. There is a slight difference in table naming conventions between the two. In addition, they use different databases, which we'll describe later. I want to point out that this talk does not describe data coming from the Oracle Health EHR, formerly the Cerner Millennium Health Record, which is VA's newest electronic health record currently in use at 6 VA medical centers. So today I'm going to start with important CDW concepts. Then I'm going to describe the aims of this example study. We're going to identify procedures associated with the study aims. We're going to determine the CDW tables of interest. And finally, we're going to prepare SQL code to pull the study data. So let's start with some basic concepts. Knowing these will help you to conduct your study. The Veterans Health Administration, or VHA, has 130 VISTA systems. VISTA is the source data from the CPRS medical record in use at the majority of VA medical centers, or VAMCs. CPRS is the computerized patient record system and is VA's legacy electronic record. Each of the 130 is represented by a three-digit STA3N. 663 is Puget Sound, 660 is Salt Lake City, 554 is Denver, 646 is Pittsburgh, etc. Remember that this system was created pre-internet in the 1980s, and that is why we have so many separate instances of the medical record. In some parts of the country, a VISTA system only contains data from one VA medical center and its associated outpatient clinics and nursing homes. And this is true of my home station here in Denver at 554. But sometimes more than one hospital or medical center is shared in a VISTA system. So, for example, the Seattle VA Medical Center and the Tacoma VA Medical Centers both contribute data to VISTA System 663. And as I mentioned before, this presentation does not cover data coming from Cerner Millennium. Now, every table in CDW has its features. It'll have two rows. One is the patient SID, which is the patient identifier is the patient whose data is being shown in this record. SID stands for surrogate ID. And then there is a station 3N, which is a VISTA system the record came from. Now, a few tables don't contain patient data. So as an example, the staff table, instead of including patient SID, you would see staff SID. So let's talk about patient identifiers. It's very important to understand these so that you're not, when you're pulling data, you're not missing data for any one of your cohort of patients. Patient A here has been entered into many different VISTA systems over the years, including one on the East Coast, one on the Midwest, one on the Gulf Coast, and one near his daughter's house. In each VISTA system, he has been assigned a unique patient identifier, or patient SID. And I want to point out that in this presentation, I'm only using fictitious identifiers. No other patient in the VA will ever have this patient SID. It's unique to patient A. And this is true of every patient SID that we're seeing here. Because patients are frequently seen at multiple medical centers, this results in records in multiple VISTA systems. You have to know all of the patient SIDs that belong to a given patient in order to completely identify all the care they have received. There are two frequently used variables to group patient SIDS. One is the patient's social security number. The other is the patient ICN, which stands for integration control number. Another option is called the scrambled SSN. Theoretically, only one person will have the same SSN, and only one person will have the same patient ICN. But there are pitfalls with the identifiers that we use, so let's talk about some of these. Sometimes more than one person can share a patient SSN, and if you were to pull the name and gender information associated with that patient SSN, you could see data for both a man and a woman, and if you looked at their diagnoses, you would see they're very different. In this example, patient A has a social security number of 123456789. She's a woman with a past medical history of diabetes and hysterectomy. Here we've got patient B, who also has social security number 123456789. Patient B is a man and has a past medical history of hypertension and mitral valve stenosis. Obviously, one of these SSNs is not correct. How do bad SSNs occur? Well, they could be due to bad handwriting. We used to put information on paper and then someone would type it in. There could be fat fingering. A person entering data may have dyslexia, or they may not check their data entry. Before about 2008, patients were identified with the last four digits of their social security number in many circumstances. But new patient safety standards have gone into effect, which require identification with the full SSN. As a result, bad SSNs are slowly getting corrected in our system. In the case of patient B, his patient SSN is really 123546789. The middle two digits of his SSN were transposed during data entry. So now you may be thinking, well, I don't want to use social security number. Let's talk about patient ICN, the integration control number, which was created around 2010 using an algorithm using the patient's name, gender, and date of birth. Here we have patient Louise Houston, who was seen at the Denver VA. They misspelled her last name, but she wasn't aware of it. Maybe she was only seen once at this medical center. Later, Louise was seen at the St. Louis VA, and they spelled her name correctly. A number of years later, Louise went to the Hartford VA. By this time, she had married, and her name was now Louise Houston Green. She has the same date of birth and the same gender in all her records, but because her name is slightly different in each record, she was assigned three separate ICNs in the algorithm that assigned those. It's important to remember that women's names can change due to marriage or divorce. Hispanic last names can be entered differently in different VISTA systems. A date of birth may be slightly off in one VISTA system. Someone's gender may change over the years. All of these things can result in one person being assigned multiple patient ICNs. The Master Person Index, or MPI, maintains VA's patient identity records. The VHA Data Quality Healthcare Identity Management Program, which is HCIDM, maintains the MPI, the Master Person Index. They are able to remove duplicate ICNs for a single patient, and they do a lot of research to make sure that it is valid to merge them. There are MPI points of contact at each medical center. So ideally, there would be a one-to-one correspondence between a patient's SSN and their ICN. But we just saw that there are different scenarios where you can get one SSN mapping to multiple patient ICNs. In the scenario on the left, the algorithm that assigned patient ICNs gave single woman multiple ICNs. This isn't desirable, and a patient's data becomes fragmented in important clinical applications like JLV. In the scenario on the right, there was a data entry error that caused one patient SSN to be assigned to two different people. And as I mentioned before, MPI is responsible for patient identifiers and any issues associated with them. There's also one scenario that you might see where one ICN maps to multiple SSNs. It's very infrequent. When I looked last fall, there were less than 1,300 records like this, and some of those were test patients. And it appeared to be due to identity records being edited by hand. So What I'm sharing with you here is my personal decision for which grouping identifier to use. If I'm working with a cohort of enrolled patients, I use patient SSN. If the patient is enrolled in a study, they are commonly identified by their patient SSN by the nurse or research coordinator. However, I verify if any enrollee in the study has a patient SSN that seems to be attached to more than one person, and this does require chart review. If I find that is happening, I exclude any patient SIDs associated with the erroneous person from the finder file. And a finder file is a list of patient identifiers that is used to pull data from other tables. Now, if my cohort is defined by patients who have a particular diagnosis or maybe certain types of admission or care, you can still, in this case, I use the patient ICN. You can still exclude any patient SSN that happens to map to multiple patient ICNs or any patient ICN that maps to multiple SSNs. I do want to point out, though, that in order to do that, if it's a research project, your Vinci analyst must do this for you. You can't do it yourself. Next, now that we've got some CDW basics under our belt, let's talk about the example aims of our study here. And we've picked one that is small in scope. We're going to investigate VHA use of a specific imaging test. And we're going to answer two questions. Which sites perform this imaging test? And how has use of this test changed over time? So the procedure is called cardiac computed tomography, or CT, for calcium scoring. This is an imaging technology that provides a simple score that indicates how much calcium is in a patient's coronary arteries. Now, before you get excited, images are not present in the CDW. I just want you to understand what a cardiac CT for calcium scoring is. Our next step is to figure out how to determine that the tests have occurred. So we are not trying to locate the images, and we're not trying to locate the results of the test. We're keeping it simple. Was the test performed? So how do you measure use of cardiac CT for calcium scoring? Well, the radiology department is going to perform the procedure, and a clinician will interpret the image and write a note. The procedure is assigned a common procedural terminology, or CPT code. This is done by a clinician, a professional coder, or the code may already be linked to the test when it is ordered. Data is extracted from the electronic health record to the CDW, and this happens every night. Now let's talk about how do we identify the procedures that are associated with our study aim. So procedure codes are developed, CPT codes are developed by the American Medical Association, and these are procedure billing codes. They're also used to bill for healthcare services like an MD office visit or a PT visit. And most of them are 5 numeric digits, and these are updated annually. I want to point out that there are also ICD procedure codes, but I'm not aware of any for this particular test, the CT for calcium scoring. ICD stands for International Classification of Disease. And HCPCS, which stand for Healthcare Common Procedure Codes, are another type of code you may run into. But again, I'm not aware of any that are used to code this particular procedure. So the CPT codes for cardiac CT calcium scoring are something that will change over the years. This technology and scoring system were first reported in 1990, but CPT code started in 1/1/2006. Again, they will change over time, so you want to know what time frame your study is covering. Because this technology was first coded in 2006, our study is going to cover the time frame 1/1/2006 until the present. If you see a CPT code that ends in a T, that's a temporary code, and they're commonly assigned to new technologies, and they are later replaced with regular CPT codes. So we have 0144T, which codes for coronary calcium testing. 0147T codes for CTA, which is CT angiography, plus a coronary calcium test. 0149T is a coronary angiography plus morphology plus a coronary calcium test. These three codes were all inactivated in 2010. The newest test, 75571, is for a coronary calcium score, and it became effective on 1-1-2010. An important nuance here, there is another code, 75574, which may or may not include coronary calcium scores. It's a non-specific code regarding coronary calcium scoring, and so I've chosen not to include it. It replaced some of these older tests, but again, since it is a test that may or may not include calcium scoring, I've decided not to include it in our study. So we're just going to include these four tests. Next, let's talk about the CDW tables of interest in order to achieve our study goals. There are two types of tables in the CDW. We have fact tables, which contain patient-level data, and there are dimension tables. These are lists of things and, in general, contain no patient-level data. There are a few small exceptions, but that will probably change. Another important concept is a primary key, which is the field that uniquely identifies each row in a table. Let's look at the CDW naming conventions. The typical naming convention is database.schema.tableName. In this example here, the database is CDW Work. This is the one that we use for operations projects. The schema is DIM, that stands for dimension. And the table name is institution. Now the convention, as I mentioned in the CDW, is that the schema represents a domain. In this example here, I'm showing you inside this box tables that are in the dimension domain. Again, dimensions are lists of things. So we have lists of antibiotics, lists of wards, lists of CPT codes, lists of institutions. I also want to point out that although I'm calling these tables, these are actually views, which is a read-only copy of the actual table. But in this presentation, I'm going to refer to them as tables. So in this operations project example, we're looking at, instead of the dimension domain, one of the fact domains, the outpat domain. Inside this box are a number of tables that are included in the outpatient domain. We've got the visit table, the workload table, the workload v diagnosis table, and the workload v procedure table. I want to point out that outpat is a misnomer. It's not just outpatient data. It consists of things that are coded with CPT codes, often in the outpatient setting, but it also includes procedures and professional services in the inpatient setting. Here's the naming convention for research studies, which is slightly different. We've got the database name, followed by the schema name, which is SRC, stands for source. It's a read-only schema. And then the table name is created by concatenating the domain name with an underscore and the table name. And CDW fact tables, again, are only in this SRC schema, which is read-only. The table naming convention, or excuse me, the database naming convention is ORD underscore the name of the investigator underscore and then a number of numbers. So this is what, if you're doing a research project, this is what your database is going to look like. It's created by Vinci for you, and they are the ones that create the name. So here's a summary of the differences between table naming conventions for operations and research. CDW Work is commonly used operations database. However, there are others. For research projects, the DIM tables are not in your project database, but you will find them in the CDW Work database. Very important is that in operations, there's no filtering of the patients that appear in your CDW tables. You're seeing data for all patients across the entire VA. However, if you're working in a research database, the tables in there only contain data for the patients in your cohort. So let's look at an example dimension table, the one that we care about the most in the study, which is dim.cpt. Again, they are lists. There's no patient level data. This is an extract from dim.cpt, but not every single field is shown. CPSID is a unique identifier for each row in dim.cpt. It's also called the primary key. Station3N is a variable which tells you which VISTA system the data came from. There are 130 VISTA systems, so each CPT code actually has 130 rows in dim.cpt, one for each VISTA system. I'm only showing you data for three VISTA systems for brevity. Then we've got the CPT code, the description of it, when the code became active, whether or not it's currently active, and if the code was inactivated on what date. Here we're looking at data for one CPT code, 0144T, from three stations. Note that the CPT code has a different SID at each station. And as I mentioned before, there are actually 130 rows for the CPT code in dim.cpt. Note that this code is currently inactive. Here we're looking at data for another CPT code, 75571. From three stations. Note that this CPT code, again, has a different CPT SID at each station. This code is currently active, as indicated by a null value in the inactive date time field. Also note that the inactive flag field has a value of null and not an N for no. So let's look at an example fact table. The fact tables contain patient-level data. This one here is an extract from outpat.workload v procedure. Dates and times are made up and the SIDs are obscured. You can see the station 3N that the data came from. You can see the date of the procedure. But most of the other fields are long integers, and there's not a lot of information here that is useful by itself. That's because we need to link to other tables. When you see a field ending in SID, that usually means you'll be linking to another table to get more information on the field. The primary key for this table is V procedure SID. Again, it uniquely identifies every row in this table. And as I mentioned before, outpat is a misnomer. CPT procedures performed on inpatients also will appear in this table. Visit date time and V procedure date time can be different, but generally only by a few seconds. The quantity field is something that's commonly used for things like dermatology procedures, where you may do many procedures in one sitting. And it is probably used in other circumstances too. There are other tables in the CDW that can contain CPT procedures, and there can be overlapped. The exact same procedure entered in outpat.workload can also be entered in inpat.inpatient.cpt.procedure. It could be in rad.radiologyexam if it's a radiology procedure, or it could be in the surgery domain or the women's health domain. But the majority of procedures are contained in the table that we're looking at, workload v procedure. Now, let's look at the S-patient fact table. S-patient is a table that contains information about individual patients. Remember how a single patient may have records in multiple VISTA systems, anywhere from 1 to N? The patient will also have N records in S patient, one for each VISTA system containing data for the patient. So if the patient has been seen in four VISTA systems, they will have four records in S patient. So let's look at an S patient extract. And again, this table contains demographic data on patients. So there will be one row for every VISTA system the patient has been entered in. So John J. Doe has been seen in six VISTA systems. Therefore, he has six rows in S patient. And the month and year are obscured, and the birthdate time field has been removed for privacy. Now, in an ideal situation, each row will have the same patient ICN for the same patient. And we see that's true here. This is an actual patient, a test patient. And then you'll see that patient SSN also has is all the same for each record. But notice that each record has a different patient SID. Now, this is important. If you join back to S-Patient with either Patient ICN or Patient SSN to get a demographic variable, let's say you want to pull in the patient's birth date, you will get multiple rows if you link on Patient ICN or Patient SSN. And so it's just something for you to watch out for when you're doing your queries, because you may or may not want to get multiple rows. Now that we've looked at a dimension table and two fact tables in detail, let's review what tables we need to accomplish our study goals. So we've got fact tables that we're going to use. We're going to use S-Patient, which has demographic variables on the patient. We have outpat.workloadvprocedure, which is information on what procedures have been performed. We've got outpat.workload. We may need to link back to it if we need any additional variables about the visit. And then we've got three dimension tables that are important to us. The dim.cpt table that tells us about CPT codes. Dim.date is useful for calculating fiscal years. And dim.sta3n provides facts about the station. So as I mentioned before, we're going to need to join tables. So in a relational database, similar data is grouped into tables, and then tables are joined together to provide information for study questions. So let's show how to join some of the tables in our example study. The fact tables are shown in blue, and the dimension table is shown in pink. Outpat.workload is a fact table, and it contains data about procedures performed on a patient. And we just saw an example of this. And here's like one row. We've got the patient, the CPT code that was coded during the visit, the station 3 and the data came from, and here's the procedure date and time. To get information on what the CPT SID stands for, we're going to need to join to dim.cpt. This table has an SID representing a unique row for that column. We have a unique identifier for each row in the table. We have the CPT code and the CPT description. So because these have the same SIDs in both tables, we can join these two tables together. We've got the CPT SID in outpat.workloadvprocedure, and it joins to a row with the same SID in this dim.cpt table. We also want to join to S-Patient because it's important for us to know information about the patient that received the procedure that we're looking at. And so again, we've got an SID 100212121, but that doesn't tell us much about the patient, so we can then join to S-Patient. And when we join on the patient SID, we can see the patient's name, whether or not he's a test patient, what his ICN is, what his SSN is, and what his birth date time is. And there are other fields that might be of interest to you. Patient SID is the primary key in the S-Patient table. And when it appears over here in outpat.workloadvprocedure, we refer to it as a foreign key. So let's look at the results if we join all three of these tables together. We have the patient ICN, which is coming from the S-Patient table. We have the CPT code, which is coming from dim.cpt. And then we have the station 3N, the patient SID, and the procedure date time, all coming from workload v procedure. Now, I want you to note that we have one patient ICN, but we have two different patient SIDs, and that's because one person had this procedure done once back in 2009 at site 516 and once in 2023 at site 573. Patient ICN is what allows us to realize that these two records really are for the same patient. So that's why we always want to use a grouping identifier, such as either patient ICN or patient SSN. The other thing you can see here is that the older CPT code was used back in 2009. Fast forward to 2023, a different CPT code is used for the same procedure, which again is CT scoring, CT calcium scoring. Next, let's look at preparing SQL code to pull the study data. SQL, or SQL, stands for Structured Query Language, and we're using a version called TSQL, which is what works with Microsoft products, and our SQL Server database is a Microsoft product. A reminder, if you're conducting a research project, you must run your code behind the Vinci firewall. Once you're logged into a Vinci workspace, you'll start up an application called SQL Server Management Studio, which is where you do your programming. So let's look at the SQL, which produced the table we were just looking at. So here's a flowchart of what we're doing. First, we're going to create a list of CPT SIDs for cardiac CT for calcium scoring. Next, we're going to find which patients had this test done. Then we're going to determine the number of tests per fiscal year and determine which sites performed the test. Because this is the beginner section of this, the beginner version of this talk, these two parts are actually on the bonus slides because we don't have time to do all of this in one-hour presentation. So in this code, we are going to be creating a list of CPT SIDs for cardiac CT for calcium scoring. This list of CPT codes will be used to limit our data pull to the test of interest. In the first step, we're specifying the database our code will be using. CDWWork is the database used for dimension tables and operations projects. And if you specify it at the top of your code, you don't have to use it as a prefix to every table name later in your code. In this second step here, the select statement specifies which fields we want, and the from statement specifies what tables we're getting these fields from. So I'm saying I want CPT code and CPT SID from table dim.cpt. You would then highlight all this code and click execute in SQL Server Management Studio. And the results that you would get, you're going to see a results tab towards the bottom of your screen, would look something like this. We have two columns. We've got the CPT code and the SID that goes along with it. Now, I'm only showing you the first 12 rows. There's actually three million plus rows that would be displayed if you ran this code. Now, let's limit what we're bringing back from table dim.cpt. So I think of the where statement as being how much do we want? We've got where are we getting it, what we want, where we're getting it from, and how much do we want? We only want these four CPT codes. So if you were to highlight this code again and run it, you now only get 520 rows. Now, it looks like we're only getting back one code, but that's just because I can't display 520 rows here. Trust me that we are actually getting data for 130 Vista systems for four different CPT codes. We can also add an order by clause, which says how do we want to display it? And I chose to show it by the CPT SID. And when I do that, it's ordered by this column here. You can see that we've got data for codes 75571, 0147T, 0149T, 0144T. That's just because of how I chose to display it. So again, an order by clause will show us it'll determine how the data is formatted on our screen. Now, you can only see your results on the screen right now. And here's how you would save them into a temporary table. A temporary table will exist as long as your instance of SQL Server Management Studio stays running. SSMS knows it's a temp table because it's prefixed with a hash sign. You can't order what's stored in temporary tables, so I've just commented it out this section. So again, you would highlight this code, and it would dump your results into table pound CPT codes. Now, if you run this code multiple times, you will get an error when you try to recreate this code. So in order to keep that from happening, the solution is to drop the temporary table if it exists before you run the code that creates it. And trust me, you will run your code multiple times as you're trying to get your coding done right. So again, drop the table, then create it. So now, right here, we have generated the SQL code, which creates a table of CPT codes that we'll use to limit our CPT data pool to the cardiac CT tests in which we are interested. Now, I want to talk about joining tables together in SQL. What I'm showing here are the two most common joins in SQL. There's an inner join, which I'm going to refer to by the word join, and a left outer join, which I'm going to refer to as a left join. In an inner join, you only get the data that exists in both tables. A left join says, give me all the data for the table that resides on the left and any data from table B that matches what's in table A. So let's say you're studying a cohort of patients who are interested in Eastern medicine. They are here in table A. Table B contains a group of patients who are enrolled in Tai Chi. Not all of them are in your study cohort. Conrad's he's enrolled in Tai Chi, but he's not in your cohort of patients you're looking at. And not every patient who is enrolled in your cohort is taking Tai Chi. If you do a left join, again, you take everyone that's in the left table and only those who match in table B, you get these results. You see which of your patients in table A are also taking Tai Chi and therefore appear in table B. However, Conrad does not show up because he does not exist in your left table. Now, if you were to do an inner join, you would get these results. You would only see the rows in which the patient is both in your cohort and taking Tai Chi. So you get many fewer rows when you do an inner join in this example. However, inner joins are great when you want to limit your query results to just your cohort or to people that only have your disease of interest or to only people that have a procedure of interest. So it's a really nice time for you to use an inner join. Again, records must exist in both tables if they are to be returned by the query. Now, we've seen this diagram before. These three tables, we want to join them together in order to conduct our study. And by doing an inner join between our list of CPT codes, we're only going to then pull procedures where they are for the coronary calcium CT test. As a reminder, workload v procedure contains the identifiers for the procedure and the patient and the procedure date. S-patient contains patient names, identifiers, and grouping variables like patient ICN. And the temp table pound CPT contains the four CPT codes of interest that define coronary calcium CT tests. Now, let's pull data for patients that have had CT calcium scoring procedures. The syntax we're seeing here is for operational projects that use the CDWWork database, which we've already stated in our earlier code that we're using. I know this looks a bit daunting, but we're going to break it down into bite-sized pieces. The from statement right here tells us what tables contain the information we want, the three that we just saw in the diagram, workload v procedure, S patient, and CPT codes. And they're all joined together. So we join workload v procedure and S patient together on patient SID, and we joined CPT codes back up to workload procedure on CPT SID. When you see me using as A, as B, as C, this is called an alias. It's a shortcut. So up here, I don't have to type spatient.spatient.cdw test patient flag. You only have to type this little shortcut, the alias, which I'm calling B here. We are grabbing all of these fields via the select statement. We're grabbing four fields from workload v procedure, which has the alias of A. We're grabbing two fields from S patient, which has an alias of B. And we're grabbing the CPT code from the temp table, which has an alias of C. Lastly, we're going to save our results into another temp table called Pound Coronary Calcium Procedures. And I'm going to drop this table first, just so that if I run my code multiple times, I won't get an error code, because you will get an error if you try to create a temporary table that already exists. Finally, we have a little more sophisticated where clause here. So it limits when the procedure visits were. So I'm saying, give me any record where the visit was before after 1/1/2006. I'm also saying, don't give me records from S patient if they're null, missing, and unknown. And this last one here says, if the person has a value for CDW possible test patient flag, if it's yes, we don't want it. This is a way to remove test patients. The is null says, if this is a null value, give it a no, and then make sure it doesn't equal yes. Visit datetime is the partition key in table outpat.workload. And table data are stored in partitions, which are like separate file drawers. And knowing what file drawer to look in will speed up your query. So basically, we're saying only look in file drawers where you've got data after 1/1/2006. I'm using visit date time because it's defined as a partition key for this table, and I'm not using V procedure date time because it's not the partition key. Lastly, if you cast a literal as the same data type as the partition key, it'll do what's called partition elimination. It'll force the database to only look in the file drawers of interest, but it also speeds up your query if you say almost everything in the CDW has a date type 2, any date time field has a date time 2. And so anytime you have a date time and you have a literal value, you want to either cast or convert it to the exact same type. I'm sure you're wondering, how can you figure out what partition keys are for a given table? They are in the back of Virec Factbooks, and they can also be found in meta queries and or tutorials. A great one is here. So if you want to learn about how you can find partition keys, please do watch this great Vinci training video. So now if we run that code, we're going to get our output here. We've got who the patient is, what dates the patient had the procedures, what procedure code was actually used to define the calcium CT scores, and we're showing that none of these people were possible test patients. In general, we want to minimize the number of identifiers that we're pulling to speed up our queries, and you could probably remove this. It's still in the where clause, but you really don't need to display it. Now, as I mentioned, the next two parts of conducting the study, you're going to find that information in the bonus slides. What we've done here is covered some important basics of working with CDW data, demonstrated how to code for a procedure, discussed the tables we need to conduct the study. We've reviewed SQL programming basics and learned how to pull the study data. And as I mentioned, code for simple summaries of the data, like which sites actually performed this test and how many were done in each fiscal year. That's in the bonus slides. I also want to make a big plug for Vinci's SQL Bootcamp. It's conducted quarterly. This is a great hands-on training course for using SQL. It's 4 weeks long, but it's really, really worth it. So please do look into this. Also, this slide shows you some resources for SQL. There are different office hours. There are training hours. They're all really useful. Please look at these. These are two great cyber seminars that Vinci does that will also be very useful to you as a novice SQL programmer. And finally, I'm here to take your questions. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Thank you, Dr. Hines. We appreciate that. So before we get started into Q&A, I just want to let our attendees know to submit a question for Anne, please go open up the Q&A pane If you cannot see it on the right-hand side of your screen, go to the lower right-hand corner, find the three dots, click on that, and you should have the option to open up the Q&A box. When you type in your question, please do not forget to press submit so that it is visible to us. And with that, we're going to go ahead and jump right in. What exactly is the patient SID? Is that a unique identifier and connected to what?
Yeah, so if you've missed the very beginning, we talked briefly about it. Patient SID is a unique identifier that's given to each patient in each VISTA system they've been seen in. So no other patient will have this patient SID, and SID stands for surrogate ID. It is a variable that's created inside the CDW. And then because if a patient is seen at multiple VISTA systems, they will have multiple patient SIDs. And so you have to know that all of these patient SIDs belong to one person. And to do that, you want to use grouping identifiers. And the grouping identifiers are either patient ICN or patient SSN.
Excellent. Thank you kindly. And let's see, our next question we have. Are the patient SIDs universally unique or just unique within each state? Sorry if you just covered that.
The patient SIDs are universally unique. So no other patient will ever have this patient SID.
Thank you. And the next person writes, apologies if you've already covered this, but I'm wondering where can researchers find lists of current and past CPT codes?
Those are in a dimension table called dim.cpt, and it will contain both past and current. Excuse me, I don't think I mentioned this, but the new set of CPT codes, they come out on October 1st of every year. And so they're usually available by October 2nd. They've usually got those uploaded.
Excellent. Thank you. And our next question. Okay, how do we sign up for the SQL and cyber classes? I believe the links for the SQL bootcamp, you have the instructions on your slides, and the cyber classes, you have the live hyperlinks in your slides.
One thing to note is most of these office hours, you just show up. A few of them will actually say, if you go to these links, they might say, please submit your questions in advance. So if you were to show up at the beginning office hours, one right here, it's every other week, you don't have to sign up in advance. This is the beginner one here, and the one over here is considered more intermediate, and they have them on both Tuesdays and Fridays. Both of these are done by the data and analytics group, which we used to call BISL, B-I-S-L. You can also ask these questions at Vinci's training hour. And then the SQL office hours, which has a pharmacy data focus, I believe they also ask you to submit them in advance on this one. But if you look at these links, they'll give you those hints and clues. And there are also some SQL on-demand trainings that are listed on CDW's website that you can take on your own if you want.
Thank you so much. And if you are looking for cyber seminars, just visit the HSR cyber seminar page, and they will have a catalog for upcoming sessions. And you can also open the archive catalog, and you can sort by Vinci or VIREC, and you'll be able to see previous sessions, which you might be able to get a lot of good information from. And if you have any questions about this, you can always visit the Vinci website or the VIREC website, or you can email Vinci at va.gov. And you can also contact VIREC through our help desk, which is available in the bonus slides. And we do have some more questions coming in, so we're just going to get right to them. When you are doing a bunch of joins, should there be a particular order, or is it random?
So it can be anything you want. And what I typically do is I kind of start with what I think of as being kind of like the parent table. And then I joined to the daughter table. So let's say I was starting with outpat.workload. That's the parent table, and underneath it is outpat.workload v procedure. That's the way I do it, but you don't have to do it. You can do any order that makes you happy.
Thank you. What is quote ZZ in the data?
When you see that, that's generally something that has been decremented. So as an example, if you see that in a drug name, it probably had that name at one point in time. It's no longer, that particular entry in the drug file is no longer being used. And so they will put a ZZ in front of it, which forces it down to the bottom of a pick list so that a physician doesn't accidentally pick that old drug. Likewise, you often will see it in ward locations. So if they've, if, like, for instance, my VA moved from Denver to Aurora, Colorado, and so all of our old ward locations now have ZZ in front of them. They were valid back in the day. They're not currently valid. I tend to use, when I see a ZZ, I think of it as something that used to be valid. So I still would include it if my data pull is from old data and I'm getting ward locations or drugs, for instance, that begin with ZZ. I believe that that is still accurate data back at the time it was created.
Thank you. We do have another question that's very specific to your
The ISNOL?
So
the reason I'm doing, so the question is like, why are you using ISNOL parentheses B.CDW possible test patient flag, comma, N not equal to Y? And that's because if something is null, you can't make a comparison. And there will be null values. And so it's just a fast way of saying, if it's null, assume that means a no. And then compare that to a Y. So that's all it's doing. It's because you can't make that comparison. If it, you can't just say, is it equal to no or equal to yes? You can't do that with a null value.
Excellent. Thank you. And can I get you to advance to your contact slide for me, please?
Yes.
Thank you. And while we wait for any further, already got another question. Why is the CDW possible test patient flag, quote, possible? What is causing the uncertainty?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. So when someone creates a patient in the electronic medical record, if it's a test patient, they're supposed to fill out a field that says this is a test patient. And not everyone remembers to do that. So the algorithm has done things like look for social security numbers, which are fictitious. So like something that is like 111111111, as an example, and it'll say, okay, that's probably a test patient because we know that the Social Security Administration doesn't issue Social Security numbers that have repetitive numbers like that. Likewise, I've seen test patients where, you know, someone has just totally made up the names. If they've hit all the keys in a row, like ASDFGHJKL. And then I think those are some other ones that the algorithm is thinking is a test patient. So there are still people, you know, it doesn't grab every test patient, but it's better than the variable that's just test patient flag. Most of the programmers I know use CDW possible test patient flag because it does get rid of some more, most like, you know, like 99% likely test patients by using that variable.
Excellent. That's great. Okay, well, I'm going to cut off Q&A there. I do want to make a couple announcements. So, and thank you, first of all, for taking the time to present today's session. That was absolutely awesome. For the audience, if you do end up having any questions after the presentation, you can see Dr. Hines' contact info is on the screen now. You can also, as I mentioned, always contact VIREC through our help desk. And with that, can you advance one more slide? I would like to plug our next session, which is Monday, July 1st at 1 p.m. Eastern. And that is part one of a two-part series on the Joint Longitudinal Viewer. And this first one will be Research Applications for GLV. And that will be presented by Dr. Reese Omizo. So we encourage you to look out for announcements for that session. And you can also always go to the HSR Cyber Seminar Catalog and sign up for it now. Just one quick last reminder before you leave today's session, or when you leave today's session, a feedback survey is going to pop up on your screen. Please take just a couple minutes to answer those few questions. We do look closely at your responses, and it helps us improve presentations we've already given, as well as gives you the opportunity to suggest topics for new sessions. And with that, again, I'd like to thank you, Anne, and thank you to Cider for your assistance. Thanks to our audience for joining us. And that does conclude today's HSR&D Cyber Seminar presentation. Thank you, everyone.